You are listening to the Special Needs Mom Podcast. This is Kara, your host, and I am so glad you're here. Before we get into this episode, I want you to know that Pathway to Peace, which is a group coaching program, is currently available to join. This program is built on three main pillars. First, coaching. It's the real powerhouse. It's what I do. It's what I love. Second, community. And if you've been around for a little bit more than a minute, you know how I feel about community and the power that it has to heal and change your life. And lastly, I have a library of content filled with resources, with modules, with lessons. We go way deeper than I can go in on the podcast. And these are available to you in a way that you can consume them in your busy life. This program would be a good fit for you if you've stabilized past the point of initial diagnosis and find yourself spending a little bit more than you'd like to in overwhelm. And you can't imagine how, given all the things in your life, you can have any sort of peace ever again. Through the program, you will gain the gift of acceptance. You will do the work to recover your spark. You'll leave the program with the tools and the confidence that you have what you need to have joy and peace part of your life once again. So it's time to change it up. I know you've been saying yes to everybody, especially serving with all your heart and everything you have to your child. Now it's time to say yes to you. Find the link in the show notes to get more information and for next steps. Hi, I'm Kara, life coach, wife, and mom to four incredible and unique children. It wasn't all that long ago that my son received a diagnosis that had my world come crashing down. I lacked the ability to see past the circumstances, which felt impossible, and the dreams I once had for my life and family felt destroyed. Fast forward past many years of surviving and not at all thriving, and you'll see a mom who trusts that she can handle anything that comes her way and has access to the power and confidence that once felt so lacking. I created the Special Needs Mom Podcast to create connection and community with moms who find themselves feeling trapped and with no one who really understands. My intention is to spark the flare of possibility in your own life and rekindle your ability to dream. This isn't a podcast about your special needs child. This is a podcast about you. If you are a mom who feels anxious, alone, or stuck, then you are in the right place. Welcome. Hello, and welcome to the Special Needs Mom Podcast. I'm excited today to bring you a guest. Her name is Megan Samrell. And what's interesting about Megan is that I invited her on the show entirely for her expertise in the time management, but I think even better said, life planning expertise than being a special needs mom. But interestingly enough, she happens to have a daughter that has sensory integration disorder and anxiety. So look at that. Worlds colliding. Let me tell you a little bit more about Megan. She is a former corporate executive turned entrepreneur and the CEO and founder of Pink Bee. She's a mom, wife, and she knows exactly how hard it is to juggle all the things while still maintaining your own sense of self and purpose. When her daughter was born in 2010, life as she knew it completely changed. Hashtag, can we all relate? After struggling to manage work, motherhood, family, etc., Megan set about a new way to manage her time and organize her calendar. She took her 20 plus year career in systems and processes and applied it to one of her favorite things, time management. She's the creator of The Top Program, a program and planner that teaches her proprietary system and processes regarding time management, organization, and productivity. We talk about the obsession with productivity in our society and our culture, and you're really going to love the heart behind who she is. So I think when we hear time management, we can hear, I don't know, like it just feels so intense and driving, and maybe it feels very masculine. So set your fears aside because that's not at all what this conversation is about. This conversation is about restoring balance and even maybe more importantly, setting down an overwhelm, learning how to manage overwhelm. So As many of you know, I approach many of these concepts from different angles. So this is a topic, time management, that I think is so multifaceted. There's so many reasons why we all feel overwhelmed. And one of the best ways to address that is to bring intention to it. And so Megan has an expertise. She is focused and double down in this area. So I highly suggest that you do take her up on the resources that she has to offer for free and have it spark your shift from just going about life, feeling overwhelmed, to bringing intentionality and planning your day, your week, and your life. Okay, that feels like a great launch point. Let's welcome Megan to the show. Hello, Megan, and welcome to the Special Needs Mom Podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. Really, it's a privilege to be here.
Well, thank you. It's a privilege to have you with us. I'm excited for this conversation because my listeners will know that the majority of the guests that I bring on to the show, you know, would identify as moms of children with any type of disability or special needs mom. And you can share if you feel like that's part of your community. But generally, I think the community that you're serving is moms that are overwhelmed.
Yeah. Overwhelmed women in general.
Yes, thank you.
Because sometimes we're even caregiving for our parents, right?
Yes,
and so really the common thread among everyone is just women that are feeling overwhelmed. And unfortunately, as most women do today, we automatically blame ourselves. I'm doing something wrong. What's wrong with me? Why can't I get on top of all of it? So not only are we overwhelmed, we are now completely beaten down, deflated, and feeling less than, which is a terrible place to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a lot of us can relate to that, and we can relate to how terrible that is. Why do you think we go to that self-blame as women?
Well, I mean, some of it is just women innately. We are, I think, truly wired that way. But then when we look at, you know, all of the advertising, whether it's TV, whether it's on social media, whatever, we see two things right now. The second one is newer than the first, but first is just the traditional woman who looks like she has it all together, right? You know,
so comparison getting the best of us.
Yeah. So okay, well, if that's possible, if she can be, you know, dressed perfectly, still look great at the end of the day, producing this amazing meal, everyone's around the dinner table laughing and having a great time. I'd love to invite you into my home in the evening. And everything, you know, the house is beautiful and all of that. So then we're thinking, well, that's obviously possible. Why can't I have it? And then I think the response to that I'm seeing so much on social media now is then this, let's just celebrate the, what they call it, hot mess express, right? The messy but hot mess express mom, which I appreciate it because it's like, hey, let's call it what real life is a little bit, but it's like, we're showing this, we can either strive for perfection, which is unattainable. So instead, let's just give up. I'm like, no, there could be a happy medium here.
Yes, we are on the same page with this one, 100%. Well, let's back up for just a second. I want to hear how you got into this space. Like, what brought you to the level of passion and expertise in this particular space?
Yeah, so I did not, you know, wake up one day and go, I want to teach people about time management. But certainly not something that ever came up in conversation. I spent the first 20 plus years of my career coming out of college in the tech space, actually. I served as a software quality architect, which just means I'm a really big nerd and a very small pawn. And I would go into software organizations that were typically really chaotic, oftentimes startups, and would basically throw away all of their systems and processes and create new ones and train them on it so that they could build their software better, faster, cheaper. So I have a bunch of, and I only bring that up because it's important to note, I have a lot of certifications around project management, process improvement, eliminating waste, all of that, that I've ultimately been able to bring into what I teach around time management. I got married later in life, started a family later in life, and shortly after my daughter was born, because I have other loved ones in my family that had children with this, I recognized very, very early with her that I was dealing with a pretty severe sensory integration disorder situation with her and felt, you know, terrified. How do I parent this? How do I provide here? And I knew as she was getting into toddlerhood, this was going to mean I needed to seek out occupational therapies and all of that were going to take time, right? And daycare was just not an option for her needs. And I just remember I was, you know, struggling with keeping my job going, trying to parent this in the way that I felt was deserved for her. And I had this day at the park where I was pushing her on the swings. It was the one thing we could do at the park that she could tolerate. And the woman next to me says in conversation, "What do you do for fun?"
Mm.
I was like, and I wish I could go back in time to remember what I said to her. I don't know how I mumbled through it, but I do remember that night.
You're like, I came up with something. I know.
I don't know what the hell I said. Because I tell you what, I didn't have an answer. But I do remember that night going through the whole nightly routine and getting her into bed and just like hanging on by a thread to just let the day end and get to bed. Mm-hmm. And I remember going into my closet in my bedroom and I had a complete breakdown because I didn't even realize I had gotten to a point in my life where I couldn't answer a simple question, "What do you do for fun?" I'd forgotten that was even something I should be having. And so thankfully, to make a long story short, that sent me on a journey to say, okay, what happened here? Like, why can't I answer that? And when I really dug into it, I realized the way in which I was planning and managing my time and juggling all of those responsibilities, what I had been doing for over 20 years, which served me so well as a corporate woman with no children, did not work in the life that I was living now. And so finally, I'm like, Megan, this is what you do for a living. Why don't you take yourself on and treat your life as you would if you went into a client and say, how do we restructure how we run life? And so I ended up kind of revamping. I threw away my old planner, my systems, my everything, started from scratch. And some women that I know started reaching out and going, I don't understand how you're like, how are you handling all this? Would you teach me what you're doing? And so now fast forward to today, here we are almost 10 years later from that day in the park. And I have taken this time management system, turned it into a teachable framework. And I like to say I'm on a mission to bring work-life harmony into homes all over the world, because we as women deserve to be able to answer the question, what do we do for fun? No matter what roles we're playing, especially when we are in a caregiving capacity, because that can take your entire life.
Yeah. There's a quote from a book. It's called Redeeming Heartache is the book. And it just hit me so clearly when I read it. It said, a heart that cannot rest cannot play. Yes. And I think especially for the mother's experience, not to discard or in any way put down father's experience, but I think mother is uniquely
just carry the
distinct,
emotional load. We do. Yeah.
Right? And so when we don't have confidence that we are showing up for our child and ourselves, there is a heart impact to that, right? Like it is a heart that is hurting. And so a heart that cannot rest cannot play. And I was like, that is brilliant in terms of explaining the experience that you are, of course, not alone. That's why I was actually thinking about the woman that asked you that question at the park.
Know,
I'm like,
right?
What a badass that she was asking that question.
I know.
Because she was genuinely curious. Like, how cool is that?
And I kind of wonder, like, was she asking me because she was seeking fun in her life, or had she already figured this out? Like, I would love to go back in time and dig deeper, but I was just, it caught me so off guard. I just remember fighting back tears and just trying to get through, you know?
Totally. Yes. And I think everybody here will really relate to that. Thank you for sharing the backstory. I really love how you turned, like you literally took yourself on as a project. How fun is that to picture? And you threw out everything. You built it up from ground zero, and how it would have been fun to watch. I have to say that. So let's go back to the overwhelm, because I feel like this is an experience that I want to say. So I think as caregiving moms, like we kind of wear this as a badge of honor, like we're more overwhelmed than others. But I think
it's a little different.
It is. So I will not acknowledge that there is a load here, but here's what I also want to acknowledge is that the experience of overwhelm is just as valid for anybody that is experiencing overwhelm. It's your experience. And so whether you truly do have a uniquely heavy load or whether you're a stay-at-home mom with one child who is typically developing, it doesn't really matter. Like that's not the point here. The point is addressing that the feeling of overwhelm is, I think, one of the most common motherhood experiences.
Yes.
And from what I understand, you're kind of a stand to say, wait a second here. Like, do we really have to stay there? So why do you think this is the most common motherhood experience?
So there's a couple things at play here. Because, you know, you look back 30 years ago, you weren't seeing this trend of women being as overwhelmed as we are today, as moms being as overwhelmed as we are today. And there's a couple things at play here that I think together have created this perfect storm. So first and foremost is let's acknowledge the fact that most women today, as compared to, you know, a couple decades ago, do have more responsibilities on our plate in terms of there are a lot more women that are working and raising children at the same time. So there's just more balls to juggle when you're dealing with that. There's also a lot of families having more children, right? We've seen a spike sometimes in families with 4, 5, 6 kids. So, I mean, that creates, you know, there's more to juggle. Now, a lot more subtly is this introduction of technology, which I am a technology lover. I'm not going to sit here and tell you technology is horrible. It's done. It has unlocked a lot of amazing things. I wouldn't be able to run the business I run without it. I'm immensely grateful for it. But let's take a look at the amount of information coming at you all day long, right? I look back into my 20s, so I'm 50 now. So I'm old enough that when I, you know, went to college, we didn't have smartphones. We didn't have, email was kind of new-ish, like even that wasn't around, right? I had to go book a time to get into a room to type my paper on the computer at the school kind of thing. So with my first job out of school, I was issued a pager that, because I was in charge of a particular piece of software. If there was a problem, my pager would go off and then I had to go find a payphone to call in. So first, people thought long and hard before issuing a page. You didn't just page someone on a whim because you knew how disruptive that was, yeah. Right? Now, it also meant that when I left home, I left home. My computer didn't go home with me. Like, work and life were separate. And you could almost shut your doors on the onslaught of information. If you were in your home and your TV wasn't on, fine. Now, we walk around with computers in our pockets that are more powerful than the systems I worked on. Mm-hmm. And they are pumping information at us at a breakneck pace. We are so reachable that we are consuming messages, content, texts, DMs, Snapchats, all the things. And so information's coming at us that we need to process, organize, and file away into how relevant is it at a pace in which our brain can't support it. And so we have all these increased roles and responsibilities. We've got an onslaught of information coming at us, and yet the traditional mainstream time management and productivity, quote, experts out there are teaching the exact same things they taught 20 years ago. And so wonder it doesn't work. And so I feel that we are failing to provide support and tangible things that we can do in day-to-day life to kind of get back to that shutting the doors on the things and giving ourselves a hot minute to breathe. And then coupled with, you know, I love me some Amazon Prime, but this Prime Now, where I want everything and I want it right now, we're applying that to our life. Everything is important. Everything has to be done right now. Of course, we're overwhelmed. I mean, even talking about it, like, raises my heart level a little bit. It's like, oh my God, how am I supposed to handle all of this?
Well, thank you. Because I feel like you did such a great job of articulating the experience that we're all having. And we don't often stop and think of actually the impact of having all this information all the time. Yeah. And of course, as you mentioned, like, there's this upside of it. Like, we get to connect with people that we didn't ordinarily get to connect to, especially in, you know, the communities that I find myself, where there's many rare conditions that we get to kind of pool together in the world.
Yeah, we're not isolated anymore, you know, feeling like you're the only one. There's a lot of benefit to this for sure.
And so essentially, like, what I'm kind of deducing is that we haven't learned how to manage this new world that we found ourselves in, especially as women, because, you know, I'm sure you would agree that how we as women plan will not probably be the same as men who work outside of the home or even in the home, just because of the typical roles that one of us would play.
And even just how men and women process and prioritize information. Particularly if you're in a caregiving role, especially with special needs, there's usually one partner that is doing more of the researching and understanding. I mean, I know when I was in the early stages of figuring out what does this mean, my husband wasn't, no fault of his own. He doesn't love our daughter any less, but he's not out reading articles and gathering books to become as educated as he can on this and what are our options and all of that. And so that's just more levels of to-do that we're putting on ourselves. Oftentimes, because we aren't good at asking for help either.
Yes, yes, definitely. We can record a whole other episode on that. And I do have actually some episodes people can look up on that. Asking and receiving help, because it's a whole nother thing is actually being willing to receive. Yeah, I think this overwhelm thing. Okay, so we've laid the foundation. Like, we are overwhelmed and will very likely struggle with overwhelm unless we learn to manage it, to manage our lives differently. And so that's kind of what you're teaching women. So I'd love to hear a little bit about where you start when you are working with a mom, talking to a mom who is filled with overwhelm, almost to the extent where she can't see a way out. So where do you start in that conversation?
So usually when people are overwhelmed, they're in one of two places. They either combat it by just working harder, faster, harder, faster, harder, right? So their wheels are going at a breakneck pace and, you know, sooner, like, they're heading for burnout, or we get so overwhelmed, we're paralyzed. It's like, I don't even know where to start. So one of the things that I like to introduce people to, and I have a ton of free resources out there for it, is to help in immediate, almost triage situation, is I have a three-step process that is called my Ditch the Overwhelm three-step process. I've got a whole PDF on that that you can download that walks you through what this three-step process is. I still find myself having to use that. It is a tool that I keep in my tool belt, because even though I plan to manage my time the way I do, there are pockets of time where all of a sudden you're overwhelmed. Like, no matter what, anytime I come back from a vacation or an extended trip, I come home and I'm overwhelmed, right? Like, oh my God, I've got to unpack, I got to do laundry, we have no food, we have no this, and I got the work, and it, every single time. So anytime I come back from a trip, I use this three-step process. But here is the fundamental shift that I think it's really important for women to make when it comes to planning our time. And this is where I was saying, I feel that all those traditional mainstream planning things are not catching up to the time that we're in. Usually what you find when you go out to search for, how can I start to plan and manage my time better, is they teach this thing where they say, get up every day and do a brain dump to clear your head. Get all the things swimming in your head out on a piece of paper. Circle your top three. I have dug into why top three. I cannot find any scientific reason why they all say the top three, but we're supposed to find our top three most important things for the day, circle those, and then only do those first. And then with the leftover time, go do the rest of your stuff. There's a recipe for disaster and impossible, especially if you are a caregiver, because first of all, you may be waking up to a child at 5 a.m. in the morning, right? Who genuinely has a need right there. Second of all, you may have a day full of 15 different appointments. They all need to happen. So those quote top three, you may have days where none of that's getting touched, and that's the way your day needs to function, right? But more importantly is, it is keeping you what I call in a state of being very reactive and in very firefighting mode. Because if we're waking up every day, starting our day with a question, what do I need to get done today? Already your anxiety levels are coming up, right? And we start to get into that fight or flight mode because we start to get a little stressed as we're starting to write all the things down, right? Well, the chemicals that are happening in your brain when you're making that list are no different than the chemicals of you're standing in the woods and you see a bear. You're going into that fight or flight mode. And when we're there, our brain's ability to make thoughtful, intentional choices is gone. Your brain is going into, I need to protect myself and I'm looking for something that feels good. So when we translate that to looking at our task list, what that means is we often end up picking the things on there that were not the right use of our time because we want to get some quick dopamine hits and to check some things off. So we look for the low-hanging fruit, and usually those were not the things that were most important. But that's the way our brain is functioning because we're already in kind of a state of panic. So at the heart of everything I teach is shifting away from this day-to-day, daily list-making mode into creating an intentional, thoughtful weekly plan. So I sit down once a week and I'm looking at all the things competing for my time that week, all of the current commitments I have with appointments and meetings and all of that, and then saying, okay, how do I piece this together in a way that maximizes efficiencies, that allows me to do the right activities at the right time of day, so that I'm showing up as my best self during those and protects time for myself along with it. So instead of starting every day with, okay, what do I need to get done today? Now, when you wake up, it's, hey, what does my plan tell me I'm doing today? And already that sounds so much more relaxing. We move away from that constant decision fatigue lifestyle into one where, you know, you ever have those days at the end of the day where your husband comes in and is like, what do you want to do for dinner? And you're like, for the love of God, just pick the restaurant. Like, I cannot make one more decision, right? Well, having a weekly plan is like you at your best self made the decisions ahead of time. Now you just get to look at your plan and have those reminders of what you're going to do and when you're going to do it.
I love it. And my guess is that when you're looking, well, not my guess. I know this because this is what I do. I think we're very aligned in the way that we look at this, but I love the way that you've distinctly described living by your to-do list versus planning.
Yeah. Task list is not a plan.
It is not a plan. It is a recipe for overwhelm and then more overwhelm because we get stuck in those two spaces, the harder, faster, and the paralyzed. And I think everyone's going to have their go-to. Like my go-to is definitely harder, faster. Like if I don't manage myself, I will really, really get spun up in the do, because it does kind of itch that itch of thinking, okay, I'm doing something so I'm safe or I'm valuable or whatever the thing
is. And your brain is those check marks give that serotonin, like, okay, that feels good. That feels good.
Yes, right? Precisely.
Everything else feels so bad. So at least that feels good. I'm checking some things off.
Well, looping back to what you said about this play thing, this whole play mystery of what do we like to do for fun? If we look at kind of how most women plan and you look at their to-do list, there would be zero on there for anything that is really filling that tank that she might have of enjoyment or fun or rest. Yes. So it's not on her plan anywhere. How do you support a mom in fitting those things in that kind of feel unfittable? Or like it's the thing that always gets squeezed out. Like, what's your approach for that?
First, I introduce people to a basic weekly planning process, which is 5 steps. And step 3, not step 5, not the last step, step 3 in the weekly planning process is the time for yourself. Mm-hmm. And it goes in your plan on the calendar as an appointment, specific times. Now, you don't have to decide what you're going to do, right? Because who knows, could be the end of the day and you're like, I'm going to Netflix for an hour, or maybe you want to go for a walk. Like it can be any of those things. But the key is it's not taking the leftover time, because guess what? You won't have leftover time. It's learning to prioritize that and recognizing that when you have that, you show up as a caregiver in a completely different way. If I can spend a half an hour with my child with a full tank, she gets more out of that than if I spend 2 hours with her where I'm half annoyed, resentful, and exhausted. And it took me a long time to believe that for myself, right? Because we're taught that the quality is in the quantity, not the quality is in how you're showing up for it.
Yeah, as in being fully present and grounded and available for human connection.
And, you know, sometimes we have to like, let's be honest. I mean, when she was younger, even if I was fully present playing Candyland for the 10,000th time, did I love that moment of playing Candyland? No, I was tired of Candyland. But as you mentioned, I was there and she could tell she was getting my full attention. And that's the other misnomer I think a lot of women have, is they think that if they don't love every activity that they're doing with their kid, they're doing something wrong. And I'm here to tell you, you have a right to say, this isn't my favorite thing to do, but it brings this one a lot of joy. And so, okay, you know, like you're not a bad mom if you don't want to play Candyland again.
Yes. I want to meet the mom who does enjoy playing right. Candyland for more than like 3 minutes. Thank you so much. I just want to mention now, because I don't want to forget, that we will have all of your contact information on the show notes.
Great.
So that should people want the resources that you're referring to, they'll be available and easy to find. Okay. So let's go back to the description of the day where you described somebody having appointments and commitments basically all day. So they've planned their week and they look at their day and it's driving and it's appointments. And this is the real lived experience of moms, whether we're caregiving moms or whether you are a working mom, entrepreneurial mom, like, let's just be honest. A lot of us have that experience for some days, not every day, but many days. Okay. So those days, my guess is if left unattended, like if a mom actually hasn't planned and she does have that full day, that she's still trying to hold that to-do list over her head.
Yeah.
And then she's not getting any of it done.
No. So this is where, like, a great analogy I like to give people is grocery shopping. So I think many of us probably do some form of grocery shopping, right? And let's say I handed you a list of like 50 things, a grocery list. And then I just gave you an envelope with some money in it. I was like, don't worry, there's money in there. Just go buy these 50 things. And you're like, hey, great. So you're probably going to run through the store as quick as you can and just get the things off the list, right? Go to the checkout. They ring it up. They're like, hey, it's $200. And you're like, awesome. You open the envelope and in it is $125. Now, is the checkout lady going to go, you're fine, and let you leave with $200 of groceries? Of course not. You're going to have to put some stuff back. Well, most women today are operating this way. They have this huge list that might equal 36 hours of to-dos. But the reality is they only have two available hours today and maybe four tomorrow, but they don't see that. And so then at the end of the day, it's like that opening up the envelope and they're seeing, oh my gosh, I only got two things done on my list today. What's wrong with me? Whereas if they had started their day knowing, hey, guess what? I've only got an hour of actual time today to do anything. What is the most important thing that I should be doing during that hour? They're going to go to bed that night not feeling guilty for only having done the one thing because they knew that was all the time that they had. So when we learn how to weekly plan the right way, what we're ultimately doing is learning how to see how much time do I have available this week and then allowing that to support us in our decision-making of what we do get done and what we let go of because the numbers are showing the time is not there. And so now guess what? The guilt's gone and all this feeling of I'm less than is gone because we get to go back and say, well, there physically wasn't the time. So I'm okay with the fact that these things didn't get done. But when we're just walking around with this random list and no idea of how much available time we have, it just perpetuates this constant feeling of I'm just not good enough. I'm overwhelmed and I can't get it done.
Man. And it's funny. I'm like, how did we all come up with this list? Because I think most of us have started there, whether we've done some work on it or not. Okay. Two things I want to comment back. First off, if you think about the default of someone carrying around this list that they're hanging over their head all the time, you really notice how unkind it is. Like it's almost kind of mean to, and that's, this is what I reflect to my clients. It's kind of mean.
Hey, here's everything you haven't done. Hey, here's everything you haven't done.
And holding it over your head all the time. So there's that. And then I think this idea of planning a week at a time is you get to be the manager of your life, the leader of your life, and you get to anticipate the clock. So I do actually do this practice of planning the week and looking at everything in advance. So I'm able to notice, okay, that's not going to work for me to have the appointment at the same time that I have to get my kid or whatever the situation is. And so then I can mobilize my resources ahead of time versus being in a panic when all of a sudden, predictably, my life's not working.
When you create that plan, let's say you're doing that on, you know, I like to do mine on Sundays. So I've got my plan for the week. And maybe on Monday, all of a sudden, I get a phone call or I realize I need to schedule a well check for my child or whatever. And I'm on the phone. If I'm only looking at a calendar that shows traditional appointments, right? The commitments to others, I might see, yeah, I'm open Thursday afternoon. Let's go ahead and book that doctor's appointment. But if I've created a plan for the week and my plan on my calendar is showing me, hey, Thursday afternoon is when I have that window of time to go run all four of the errands that I need to get done this week. And now that's in my calendar as an appointment. So I'm creating appointments with myself. So now when I go and I'm on that phone call and they're like, we have Thursday afternoon open, I get to have that conversation with myself of, okay, Megan, if you take that appointment slot, when are you going to get the things done that you were planning on spending that time on? And I get to make a really good choice. Maybe the answer is yes, because that appointment is more important, but maybe the answer is no, let's look to next week, right? And that's one of the huge benefits of this weekly planning is it prevents us from getting overbooked and overscheduled and supports us to create really good boundaries around what we say yes and no to.
Preach it. I'm loving it. Yes, definitely. All of it. Yes. I want to add another layer, and that layer is our society's addiction to productivity. Yes. So what are your thoughts? I'll throw it over to you. What are your thoughts on this
addiction? I'm laughing because I'm thinking of a commercial that my daughter cannot stand. So it's a granola bar, one of the Nature granola bars commercials. You know, I think they're third graders and they're sitting on the bus at the first day of school. And one third grader leaves the other and says, "How was your summer?" And this little 8-year-old goes, "Productive." Like, that's how insane our addiction to productivity is, that we're showing kids using that as a way to celebrate a good summer.
That's something. Oh my gosh. Yes. And that is kind of where we're at. Like, that's where, exactly. Let's just be honest, that's where we're at as a society.
So I think that's a perfect example of our addiction to productivity, right? But I mean, it's everywhere, yeah. Even in subtle things, boss babe, like there's an implication of I'm super productive, right? There are planners out there, you know, that get, or even the planning system called GSD, get shit done. I mean, it's everywhere. We are promoting and celebrating getting stuff done. And we're defining stuff as things that externally other people can see and that you can go, look what I did. Instead of what I wish we would do, and my definition of productivity, the way I teach it in the program is this: we learn how to get the most important things done in a stress-free way.
Beautiful.
That is productivity. And maybe it means one thing got done that entire week, but it was the most important thing. I can remember back when I was trying to find the right occupational therapist for my 3-year-old. And between my jobs, I was still in corporate at that time, that entire week, all that got done was finally finding the facility and the place that I could go get the initial appointment booked. And that was a win. Nothing else happened that week, but guess what? That was the most important thing that week. And so helping people to kind of butt up against this culture of more, more, more. And instead, let's celebrate important, 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 because I'd rather get one really important thing done than 10 meh kind of stuff done.
I feel like, because I think so many of us have just come in with this default belief of you get your value from what you produce, and producing means, you know, all the things that you said earlier in terms of like the default definition. I love your definition. Yeah. So we have this obsession with learning, with college, with producing some high-level career. And then all of a sudden, people in my shoes find ourselves with a human being that's probably not going to do any of those things. Mm-hmm. And so it really turns us upside down, because we don't know what other value there is. Part of the grief process and part of the full acceptance process is really recognizing and really owning and really detangling all of this, is that our value does not come from what we produce. It doesn't come from
the last thing. I mean, I always like to think about, how do I want someone to describe me? I hope I don't get described as a woman who gets a lot of stuff done, right? Maybe that's at the bottom of the list. I would want to be described by, you know, hopefully she's a good friend. She's a great listener. She takes time out for others. She's an avid reader. She's a music lover. Like, if someone were to ask me to describe myself on a piece of paper, that's what I want to lean into. And so my hope is that we can, as a society, celebrate those things. And then the visual output is just, it's different for everybody. And that's not what we celebrate, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think when we have humans in our lives that we are a caregiver for, where we're realizing that may not be their path, it's highly likely not, this gives us the opportunity to double down and be a part of teaching just uttermost kindness and launching really good human beings into this world, right? And think of the impact they can have.
Mm-hmm. I know, just for being a human being in whatever way that they are being. And yeah, I think you said that really beautifully. And I think, you know, both of us in our unique spaces, I think we're saying a lot of the same things, which is amazing because you're getting to speak to an entirely different audience. And essentially, I think what we're doing is we're trying to change the narrative of what it means to be a mom in these spaces.
A conversation I had with my daughter when she was much younger is one I like to share with moms, because I think when we become a mom, it's really easy to have that become our encompassing identity. Mm-hmm. And I was tucking my daughter in one night and she was 7 or 8. I was working on a project for work that I wanted to go finish. And I was like, well, I got to go finish. Cause you know, they're trying to rope you in, keep you in that room as long as possible.
Yes, I do.
and finally she said, I got to go. And as I was walking out the door, she says, Mom, sometimes I think you like work more than me. And I mean, that's like the, you know,
yeah,
knife in the heart right there. But I paused and I just remember turning around. I said, why do you think that? And she says, well, sometimes it's like, I feel like you would rather be finishing up something for work than playing another game with me. So remember in the moment, I'm like, okay, there's the quick thing I can say to get out of here. Or do we actually talk about this? So I sat down. I said, well, you're not going to like my answer. I said, sometimes I would rather go do the work thing than play another game with you. And I mean, her eyes, you know, wide open, because I was not, you know, she's thinking she's reeling me in here a little bit. And it gave me the opportunity to share with her. I said, listen, I was Megan for a very long time. Megan did lots of things. Megan has lots of interests. And then I met your dad. And my husband calls me Megs. He has from our first date. I don't know why, but it just, he always has.
My husband's a name shortener too. This is hilarious.
And so, and you know, my daughter hears him always calling me Meg. So I said, so then I met your dad and we got married and then I became Megs. I said, do you think that Megan stopped doing all the things that she loved when suddenly she became Megs? She's like, well, no. I said, of course not. I said, I still did, you know, at that time there were different activities than I do now. I used to do triathlons and all those. Like, I still did all those things when I became Megs. I said, and then you were born. And then I became Mom. So now I get to be Megan and I get to be Megs and I get to be Mom. And all three of them are incredibly important. But I am all three of those things. I can't only be Mom. I can't only be Megs. And I can't only be Megan. So sometimes Megan has been working hard for weeks and is so close to finishing something she's really proud of. And I've just been Mom for the last 2 hours. So now I know if I can just go be Megan for 30 more minutes, I can get this thing done that I'm really proud of. So yes, sometimes Megan does get to be front and center. I said, but it's us working together, realizing it's all of that. And now, you know, all these years later, we still in our household use that all the time because something like my husband or my daughter will call me and be like, hey, Mom, I'll be like, hang on, Megan just needs 5 more minutes and then I'm all yours. And it's that nice way to communicate and remind one another that we are all individuals outside of the roles we play for one another as spouse, as mom, as dad. And so we always call it all of our split personalities. And I think it's a really interesting way to talk to our kids about that some too, when they're of an age old enough to understand it. You know, at 2 years old, she wasn't going to understand that. But it's a nice way, even as ourselves, when I'm looking at my plan for the week, I want to make sure I see Megan reflected there, Mom reflected there, and Meg's reflected there somewhere every single week.
Oh man, this is a great story, because I think it really hits on several things. One, it's very clear that you shifted from this either or context to really kind of saying, how can I have both?
And the relationship with, it's the harmony of our life.
Relationship with my daughter, relationship with myself, relationship with the work that you get to do. Like, it's really a beautiful example of having that shift of context, which is, you know, kind of what I focus on in coaching. The other thing that I think you really hit on really, really well articulated and such good imagery is identity. I'm sure you see this as well, is that as we shift into motherhood, wherever we're coming from and whether we're working outside the home or not.
No, but it can be all consuming.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So the identities that we maybe just subconsciously shed and leave behind ends up putting so much pressure on the singular identity of motherhood.
Well, think about going into your children's school if they're there. You, like, you know, let's say your child's name is Liz, right? Oh, you're Liz's mom. No, I'm, you know, and I correct children when I'll say, oh, you're so-and-so's mom. No, you can call me Megan. Like, I am a human. I have an identity outside of being her mom. But it's those subtle things that just keep reaffirming, this is it. This is your entire identity, when we have to fight to keep hold of our identity prior to motherhood.
And I don't think we'd give thought to the unspoken lessons that it's teaching our children if we don't really own these identities. Because if we only have that identity of motherhood, when it, I think I said earlier, like, it puts a lot of pressure on these kids. Because if that's all they know, that that's all you've got, then it's not a good recipe for them to grow up and be independent if that is their path. So what we're teaching our kids is to have their own identities as well.
Yeah.
And if you look at people that are really grounded, they know who they are. Mm-hmm. And so this is a huge point. So I'm so glad you brought this up. Well, Meg's mom. Well, we're going to wrap up. And so I just wanted to toss it over to you. If there's anything that we didn't get to touch on or that just is on your heart as we're closing it out, I'd love to hear what you have to share.
Yeah, I think I always just, whenever I'm given an opportunity to say this to other women, especially other moms, there was a point many years ago, I just remember this woman very calmly and lovingly looking at me right in the eye and just said to me, you know, you're worthy of support. You know that, don't you? And I was at a stage of life where that brought me to my knees. And it's something I have to remind myself of daily. And I just would love to remind all of the women listening, you too are worthy of support, whatever that looks like for you. And that it's important for you to prioritize that for yourself as well.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. And I can really emphasize that when we own this worthiness, it is a game changer. And I can see how that would be pretty confronting if it wasn't something that you were experiencing. And thank God that you listened and and now are a model to us as you have embodied all these identities that you are worthy of.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. We'll see you in the next episode. One more thing before we officially wrap up this show. Sometimes when I'm listening to podcasts, I have the experience of wanting more. I'm listening at the very end thinking, I sure wish that episode didn't end. I invite you, if you feel in any way the same way, I invite you to the Special Needs Mom Podcast Community, which is a free group that I host on Facebook, where we as a community of fellow moms who listen to this podcast and are experiencing life in similar shoes, get to talk to one another, get to share stories, get to actually interact. I hope you'll consider joining. See you over there.